Chapter 4. That was Dredge. He'd come barrelling in the door, swooped past behind Time's back, and was alighting along the counter two spots over before she even realised he'd opened the door, while barely even setting off those little bells that always jingled if the door got jarred.
"How you doing, Dredge?" the waitress said. "Good to see you."
"You too, Agnes. As always. Wow, long one from over Barstow way. Some weather too."
She took his order and went over to put the bill on the clothesline next to the rest. Time realised in the next moment that although she'd been quite careful to keep her tale confined to an audience of one, that one hadn't gotten that she was trying not to tell the whole place. Maybe Agnes had actually realised it at the time. But seeing such an appropriate audience for such a bizarre story likely made her forget. Either way.
"Hey, Dredge," Agnes said as she returned with coffee for him. "This young lady here has a tale that I just told her is worthy of your best."
He turned her way. The guy was bright-eyed and he smiled immediately.
"Hi," he said. "Abductee?"
"Not yet," Time said with a smile, feeling a little betrayed by such a spotlighting. I just got a call on an abandoned phone that's not even wired up."
"Well, I like the sound of that already," Dredge said, grinning. "Please, do tell. Oh, I'm sorry, where are my manners? Call me Dredge."
He extended a hand, and she took it before she lost her nerve and made the moment awkward. They shook quickly. "Time weathers," she said.
"Really? Love it. Beats the hell out of Dredge."
"That's your real name," Time said, casting a very quick glance over to Agnes.
"No, that's even worse. Nice to meet you, Time. I'm guessing Agnes already said at least something about me and my, obsessive tendencies."
"Just a little," Agnes said. "Hopefully enough to prepare her, at least. I'd have told her more, but we ran out of time."
"Thanks for the PR," Dredge said. "The only bad publicity is no publicity."
"I know that's a famous saying," Time said. "But I'm not sure how I feel about whoever said it." They ended up talking for a while. She found him earnest and engaging enough to tell him what Einstein's ghost had said. Even Dredge hadn't heard of anything called Morning Glory, but he was absolutely fascinated by the tale.
"Just because I've never heard of Morning Glory doesn't mean it doesn't exist," Dredge said. "So maybe we need to check with someone who's more likely to know."
He had someone in mind, he said, but it wouldn't be a simple case of online connection.
"The professor is pretty much that mythical alchemist that Sinbad goes off to find, seeking ancient wisdom, who's wound up being about half nuts and living in a cave."
Dredge shook his head.
"It's a few hours from here, but if you really want some idea what your strange experience means, what it's about, I think Dr. Cave Dweller's the way to go."
Things had certainly gone unexpected ways on what was supposed to be a simple and straightforward journey. Lucky for Time, she wasn't on a tight timetable. With a presumed font of insight not all that far away, and curiosity driving her nuts, she soon found herself in Dredge's car. He wasn't an over-the-road trucker as she'd expected, just a salesman who passed through a lot. Headed back east to an undisclosed location to introduce her to someone whose last name was presumably not Cave Dweller. They'd been on the highway nearly 3 hours when Time finally couldn't hold off any longer and had to ask for Dredge's numerical definition of that particular distance estimate.
"Not far now," he said. "Maybe half an hour."
Most of that, as it turned out, was dirt road stuff, as he'd more or less promised. Ahead of them rose some low hills, relatively barren and baking in the afternoon sun. "Getting pretty far off the beaten path," Time eventually said. "I bet you could dump a body out here and it'd never be found."
"Relax," Dredge said. "I've already got my quota for the week."
His deadpan might have been drier than hers. "That's good," Time said. "Of course, I was mainly hoping you weren't making up the reclusive weirdo, because he sounds fascinating enough to make this whole strange detour worthwhile." Dredge didn't glance over at her, or reply, but he did smile.
They finally got to what seemed to be their destination about 5 minutes later. But it was truly nowhere. Just an unmarked dead end at a flat spot nestled between four small hills.
"The rest is on foot,"
Dredge said, as she was turning to look his way.
"Just a few minutes."
"How does this guy get his groceries?" While she was stretching beside the open passenger side door, she heard the trunk lid pop at her back and spun around to see that Dredge had opened it. She couldn't see what he was doing, but before she had time to ask about it, he was already closing the lid. He came around to her side carrying a bottle of Cuervo and a little rolled-up plastic baggie.
"Peace offerings,"
he said. And he pocketed the baggie and went over and shut the passenger door before turning to her to explain.
"I mean, yeah, the doc likes me, but that in and of itself isn't like a personal welcome, Matt, and I'm bringing a stranger. I only hope this covers it."
"So, where to?" Time said. "Lead on. But it had better be a real few minutes, and not another egregious underestimate."
"Henceforth, I'll try to be as unegregious as possible,"
Dredge said, and his smile became an amused grin, as hers was doing, as he gestured to the northeast.
"Yon way, my lady, and watch out for rattlers."
There were no rattlers. In fact, for a while there was nothing but uphill followed by downhill. All of it and everything else in view dotted in hardy shrubs and grasses, but otherwise as barren as a Martian landscape. As it turned out, the hermit they'd come to see did in fact live in a cave. But a remarkable one it was indeed. The artificial cave had a decidedly unnatural looking entrance, this being a rather impressive solarium that opened up on an unspoiled vista to the west. The glass had variable polarisation. As they descended the far side of the second hill, the panes were dark because of the nearly overhead sun, and so nothing within could be discerned by a pleased and relieved time. "Oh wow, that's a trip," she said as they drew closer, admiring the remote construct.
"That's just the cover," Dredge said.
When they were within about 50 yards of the equally dark glass front door, he slowed to a halt and had her do the same.
"I'm sure we've been noticed," he said. "Hang back while I do the offerings thing."
She did as he asked, watching as he went on with the bottle of tequila held on high.
"Hey, it's me,"
he said, yelling toward the modernistic facade of tempered glass and steel.
"I bought treats."
"What is he, a dog?" Time said under her breath. He, as it turned out, was a she. Not remotely the wrinkled, weathered, white-bearded mountain man Time had been picturing. Rather, she looked like two different famous folk. One past and one even farther past, who happened to resemble each other considerably. And as it turned out, yes, she was the past celeb, a retired actress. Dredge probably should have warned her that she was about to meet not the legendary Stevie Nicks, but her near-mirror image from recent cinema, the legendarily rebellious Wilson Mandine. Then again, maybe he just wanted to test the social skills of his new friend. Time just stood there and smiled from where she'd been told to wait. Dredge waved her in, and she came in slowly, trying to figure out if that could possibly be the biggest of the Hollywood troublemakers, and one of several to basically end up off the radar after finally giving up on opening the eyes of the general public. How could it not be her, though, with those credentials? Time decided to play it dumb. Literally. She just smiled pleasantly as she approached, saying nothing, but offering a shallow nod to the rather inscrutable and weathered, but still quite fetching, face of the notorious multimedia star of about 6 years earlier.
"Oh, come on," Dredge said. "No way you saw this coming. Not even a little surprise."
"Huh? I don't believe it," Mandine said, sleepy eyelids lifting when she saw that Time really was pretty much clueless about it all. "You finally brought me one who doesn't want to know why I dropped out of Talk Radio Zombies?" "Hey, I've heard of that," Time said. "I'm sorry," Mandine said with a wry grin. "Is it that you don't watch stuff, or that you just have better taste?" Time told her she didn't really watch all that much in the way of TV shows or movies, explaining that she was usually too busy. "Ah, online gaming. Got it," Mandine said. She glanced up at the nearly clear sky. "Well, I love the outdoors, but it's kind of bright, so maybe we should take this inside." decidedly less ethereal than Fleetwood Mac's immortal singer, Mandine led the way at a purposeful pace, taking them through her solarium, complete with tropical plants and hot tub, and into the main of what she soon revealed to be a quite impressive Bond villain headquarters, as Mandine jokingly referred to it toward the end of the 5-minute grand tour. One of the most interesting spots was a tunnel that led off laterally for nearly a mile, all the way, Mandine explained, to an abandoned missile silo that was now a 10-story underground greenhouse, according to the hermetic former star. "That's only on the grand tour," she said. "You'll just get in the mini for now." Before and after the tunnel entrance were generally broad rooms with tall ceilings, furnished in a stylish but hardly flashy manner. Yes, there were wall-sized video screens here and there, but overall it was a lot more space-age Spartan than ostentatious wealth display. She wasn't alone there. Oh, she was the only human, but there were cats and dogs and terrariums with snakes and even a whole room aviary.
"One thing I always wondered about this place," Dredge said. "Where's the garage?"
He seemed earnestly curious, but Mandine just smiled at him like he should know better. And from what time could tell, that quick little smirk could have meant, "as if you don't know," as easily as, "I'm not saying." "Excuse me, Miss Mandine." "That's Will," Mandine said. "I've let shadier characters call me Will, so why not you?" Her smile was warm and honest, and in that radiant flash, Time realised she not only got the whole star power appeal of Wilson Mandine, but that she'd actually seen the actress in a movie once. Time's eyes lit up. "You played the farm girl in Blood Ridge!" She couldn't help it. The words had just gushed out. "Ah, so you do watch movies," Will said. "Albeit just weird ones about cave monsters in the Old West." "I was going out with someone who loved both genres." "I was 14, Will said, with an amused little smile still playing on those famous lips. "Martha Blackwood seems like a couple of lifetimes ago, which I suppose it technically is, so that only makes sense." They wound up back in the solarium, because there were still a few hours of daylight left. With the sun slanted off to the west, it was coming straight in through the front wall of glass panes, so those were tinted almost black by the electronics attached to each one. The roof panes, the ones over their heads where they sat at the 4-seat picnic table, in the midst of the palmettos and elephant ear plants, were allowing in considerably more light. "I had to pick a direction," Mandine said, staring off through the medium dark panes that curved to make the solarium floor to ceiling. "I like sunsets and weather, so I went with west. The only drawback, really, is that if there aren't any clouds, you don't get a good clear look at sunset until it's almost over. And the panes lighten with the fading light. And today looks like one of those days. Night's coming straight on and I don't think we can stop it."